exclusively on Paramount Plus. Get ready.
Vamanos!
To explore like never before.
Swiper, no swiping!
Oh, man!
Swing into action.
We need your help.
Woohoo!
Yay!
With a girl who put adventure on the map.
I don't think I can do it, Dora.
I'll protect you, Boots. Together, we got this.
Todos juntos!
Yay!
Dora, the brand new series. Stream with your family now, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a Monday morning here in New York City. This is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Fame
welcome
Chris
back.
Carter.
Yeah,
Nick Wright,
too,
great
guys.
To have you back.
Nice
to see. But you had a very fun weekend.
Yes.
We saw you all over social media, thoroughly enjoying yourself.
We had a great time. Great time, great weekend. Inducted 8 people into the hall. Tremendous. They got to work on them speeches, though.
They do.
I think they're still talking.
Still going.
Yeah.
there's no music that plays to get them off the stage.
No. We're going to have the Sandman come next year.
We got a great show for you today. Lots of football to talk about. Antonio Brown is already missing time with a foot injury. Ezekiel Elliott, he's still waiting for a new deal, unlike Tom Brady. And that's where we start this morning. Big news out of Patriots camp as their quarterback of the past and present is now their quarterback of the near future. 6-time Super Bowl champ Tom Brady, who just turned 42 this weekend, reportedly agreed to a 2-year, $70 million extension, making him just the 6th highest paid quarterback this season. Yesterday, he tweeted, "I got a chance to hold my draft card a few hours ago. Never forget where you came from." See, what do you make of the deal that Tom Brady got from the Patriots?
I'm not surprised at all. Last week when we talked about it, we asked, was there concern that Tom Brady didn't have a deal? And I was like, no, because I thought that they would do something before the season started. And just like in Patriot fashion, they zig when you think they're zagging, and they create even more cap space. Yeah, they give Tom Brady the extension, but they created more cap space. And then talking to not only to Belichick this weekend, but talking to another New England executive, and this is how Belichick wants it. Like, he likes a quarterback on a friendly deal that now he can go out potentially and always get 3 to 5 quality football players. So they realize the Tom Brady situation is one of a kind in the NFL. They're trying to take advantage of the window that they pried back open and being in the last 3 Super Bowls, believing these next 3 years that they can get a couple more Super Bowl appearances. They were probably going to do it a different way, a different style, but I'm not surprised at all. Robert Kraft has 4 sons officially, biologically. But in his conversation, he always talks about the 5th, and that son being Tom Brady. Right now, you could see even this weekend, Jonathan Kraft is starting to have a more prominent role in the New England franchise. He was at the Hall of Fame weekend. I'm not surprised. Not surprised at all. Bill Belichick, I don't know why we keep trying to make him quit. And I don't know why we don't take Tom Brady at its word that he's going to try to play until he's 45. And the only man that can stop him is Belichick. And Belichick doesn't have full control because the Kraft family, they realize how important Tom has been, not only to their overall development, their father in this franchise, and how Mr. Kraft got the $6 billion as far as net worth. Tom Brady had a lot to do with that.
And I'm really happy for Brady because it wasn't just an additional year. It's 2 additional years, which takes him 2/3 of the way to his goal of the age 45 season. So the age 45 season would be this year plus 3 more years. He's now locked in for this year plus 2 more years. To your point, C, he gets an $8 million cash infusion this year. He gets a cash raise, but they also, his cap hit goes from where it was at 27 down to 22. The Patriots already had, I think, about $9 million of cap space left open. Now it's 14, and you mentioned could they add 3 or 4 quality players. Or could they add one star-quality player, a player that is available and that they've been rumored to be poking around at, and that's Trent Williams, the left tackle out of Washington who's disgruntled with his contract. Prior to this even happening, there had been rumors that the Patriots were a team that had been in contact with Washington. Now that they have extra money, could that be the fit? Or will they just keep that flexibility open, see who comes available, or roll it into next year? But this is good, obviously, for both sides. For Brady, he gets the security. And the Patriots, they know they don't have to worry about Tom Brady accepting a franchise tag next season, which would put them in a very difficult financial position. And if you look at their roster, they now have the following all locked up for this year and next year. Brady, all of their running backs, Edelman, and, of course, the rookie wide receiver, four-fifths of their offensive line. So that's almost the entirety of their offense that we consider difference makers. On defense, Michael Bennett's locked up. Dante Hightower's locked up. Their entire secondary, except for Devin McCourty, locked up. So you've got, with the exception of Devin McCourty and a guard, everyone that seemingly matters the most for the Patriots locked into this season and next season. That was the case a couple days ago, except for Brady. Now Brady's on that list as well.
We talked about it on Friday. The Patriots, they're all in on Brady and Belichick, but mainly Brady, because Belichick most likely will be there for a while. So they go, he wanted 3 years, they gave him two. Does that tell you anything about how the negotiations went or what his plan might be? Do you think they had long talks about what he wants and what they would settle for?
Yeah, I think Tom's had different plans than they had the whole time. But they're going to give the deal that's best for the organization. And they understand where they're at with Tom Brady. And I don't think that that third year is really that important to them. 45 doesn't mean anything to them. Two-year extension given the 1 year, that is 3 years to them. Like, will he be able to make it to 45? We're talking about his contract. I don't believe that that's that important. I do believe he's going to try. And there's a reason why he keeps saying that, the reason why he put on the added weight. He's going to try to play until he's 45. So the extension, it is a great thing. The pay raise is a great thing. And, of course, like New England, they're the best in the business. They create more cap space. And I think, Nick, you make a great point. This is the team you're going to see for the next 2 years.
Yep.
You might as well get used to it. This is what we're going to see. And I'm sure Belichick, he's going to tinker with it a little bit. But I believe this physical style for which they're going to play, the same physical style that won them the first three Super Bowls. They've been a little more finesse on the last three Super Bowls, but I believe they're going back to how they won those original Super Bowls and get after people offensively, going to run the football, going to play to Tom Brady's strength, keep the game close, have him win it in the fourth quarter. Great defense. I believe their defense will definitely be a top 10 defense, top five in scoring. They have the best secondary in football, and their special teams typically are one of the top five, top to bottom units that we're going to have in the NFL.
And this is a moment where I think it's important to step back and think about what just happened here. The Patriots, well regarded as maybe the smartest organization in all of sports, just decided it is in their best interest. It is a good move to give $70 million for a player's age 43 and age 44 seasons. That is impossible. That is, just 3 years ago, that would have sounded laughable, that we're talking about a guy not playing into his mid-30s, but playing into his mid-40s, and the Patriots saying, sign us up for it. Yes, it is a testament to the way the game has changed and players are aging, all of that, but it is truly a testament to number 12 and to the way he has been able to adjust his game, adjust his body, stay in shape, stay viable into what would be his third decade of professional football. It's absolutely remarkable.
And you wonder if guys like Philip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger, maybe not Eli Manning, but some of the older guys that were sort of around at the same time are thinking, well, okay, look what he was able to do. He's now opened up the door for us to be playing into our 40s. All right, we'll talk a lot much more about this coming up. On the other side, can a healthy Antonio Brown lead the Raiders back to the playoffs? Keyword there is healthy, though. That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. We will get to Antonio Brown in a second, but first, another day of Browns practice, another one-handed catch from OBJ.
Ooh. Oh, he got turned around?
Oh, yeah, that was a bad throw there. Threw it behind him. Or quarterback's going to say, I threw it where the defender couldn't get it. So you had the double clutch there. You can see the chemistry building.
Yeah.
Practice after practice with these two.
Watch this,
Colts camp. Jacoby Brissett throwing it away. Look who comes up with it. The ball boy, one-handed.
I mean, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good there, guy. I like that. I like it. It's paying attention. Didn't lose the other ball. Making sure you keep the practice reps going quick. That's nice.
I'm hearing.
Might be a Larry Fitzgerald in his future.
I'm hearing he's getting a tryout with the Patriots this week.
On to the dunk contest at the basketball tournament. Khalil Iverson absolutely posterizes the defender here.
Ooh. Oh, it's part of the dunk contest? So that guy just signed up to have that done to him?
Did his head just get smacked on the ground?
Man, that's stupid, man.
Why
is he in the restricted area? You're going to get dunked on if you try to go up in the restricted area. He's not big enough. Like, come on, son. Like,
watch
not the
this,
best.
Though.
All right, finally, Mo Salah thinking he's got a game winner for Liverpool in extra time, but Kyle Walker comes up with an amazing clearance at the goal line.
Teamwork, make the dream work. Amazing stop here. Tremendous header. Oh, yeah, that's going to be in the net.
Nice.
And then Man City went on to win in extra time. So this is a game-saving play in the 93rd minute.
So over the weekend, Brady reportedly got a 2-year, $70 million extension. Sounds great. $35 million a year for 2 years, seemingly, right? Well, fast forward to Monday when more details about the contract were released. It turns out Brady will actually be a free agent after this season because the 2 years void after the 2019 season. Here's what Tom Brady had to say about his future.
It's really the reality for most guys in the NFL. You know, I don't want to think that I'm any different than everyone else. Like, it's football's a tough business. It's a production business. And, you know, I'm ready to go this year. And that's really what matters. And that's where my focus is. It's a unique situation I'm in, you know. I'm 20th year with the same team. And, you know, be 42 years old. So pretty much uncharted territory, I think, for everybody. And, you know, I'm going to go out there and do the best I can this year and see what happens. It is what it is. That's a good line. So whoever said it, it's very pertinent. So, like I said, there's a lot of guys who have, you know, 1 year left on their contract. You know, so the situation, I got 1 year to go, and we'll see what happens.
All right, so once again, after this season ends, Brady could become an unrestricted free agent for the first time in his career. So, CeCe, what does that tell you about the future of Brady and the Patriots?
The Patriots have decided they're going to go year to year. They're going to allow Tom Brady to be somewhat in control, but not completely in control. And when Robert Kraft and his family decided to give Bill Belichick ultimate control over the roster, this is the way Brady's career is going to end. We know the Jimmy Garoppolo. We know the pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, that was real. They don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, but now they do have age, father time. He's undefeated, and Belichick realizes that. Now, the last couple seasons, you see that he's made adjustments. Last year, tried to put the bonus package in there where he could earn more money. Huh. Didn't play well enough to be able to get that money. So you know what they decided to do now? Because Tom wanted a contract extension. They gave him a fake one, gave him more money this year, guaranteed him he'd be there this year, and they're going to play it out year by year. Regardless how many times Tom wants to go to the press conference and say, I want to play till I'm 45. You see, he changed his tune yesterday.
Yeah.
Because Belichick did not give him the type of contract that him or his agent wanted. He told him, I will bump you up this year. And you know what, Tom? You're just like everyone else. We're going to wait and see as far as what we're going to do as far as moving into the future.
That is absolutely right and honestly absolutely remarkable to me. That Chris could say, Belichick said to Tom Brady, you are just like everyone else. And that is clearly what Bill Belichick has done. And maybe that is part of what makes Bill Belichick the greatest football coach we've ever seen, but it is stunning to me. Because here's what we know. None of these things are speculation. None of these things are hypothesis. We know this. We know Brady wants to play past this season. We know Brady wants to play for the Patriots for the entirety of his career if he can have it his way. And we know Brady has never demanded top of the market money. We know all of those things. And so it then follows to reason that Tom Brady, what he wanted was a real contract extension, not a break the bank contract extension, but a real contract extension with some guarantees passed this year. And the Patriots, meaning Bill Belichick, flatly refused to give it to him. And so I want people to understand, this is not they have a team option for 2020. No, this is not a contract extension, what he got over the weekend. It was cap manipulation, which is totally legal. A lot of teams do it. But they free up $5.5 million in cap space. He gets $8 million cash infusion. And the final 2 years of this deal automatically void on the final day of the league year. So unless they do another new contract this year, Tom Brady will be an unrestricted free agent for the first time in his entire career after this season. And that is, considering his last 3 years were execute greatest comeback in Super Bowl history en route to a title, 16, win league MVP, 17, win another Super Bowl, 18, that is his contract situation in 19 is unprecedented in my time following sports.
It's also remarkable in that they don't have a clear-cut backup plan. You could see if they had a guy they've been grooming like a Teddy Bridgewater or maybe even a Josh Rosen that, okay, they want to go year to year while they get someone up to speed. Right now they have Brian Hoyer and Stidham who they drafted. Stidham. But what do you think is more likely, CeCe, that he does become an unrestricted free agent and he goes to play for another team or that he walks away from the game if the Patriots decide they don't want to bring him back?
No, I think there's zero chance that he goes to another team. I think the Patriots do want to bring him back. What the Patriots are going to try to do, from a running standpoint, physical standpoint, they're going to lean on their defense and their offensive line as Tom continues to age and as he retires. You can see last year, they believe they can improve drastically. Talking to people around New England, they believe their defense will be drastically improved. They had a losing record last year on the road. They were 3-5. They gave up more than a touchdown on the road than they did at home. So as they build this team, it's going to be based on physicality. It's not going to be based on Tom Brady throwing the ball. It's going to be Tom Brady being efficient on third, being efficient, not turning the ball over, and being really good late in close games because, you know, the Patriots always play. They're going to play you tough. So they believe they can improve on it. How they go forward is exactly like they did week 16 through the Super Bowl where they averaged 38 times a game. They ran the ball 180 yards. That's what they are building. This is not going to be Tom Brady and the high-flying Patriots. I don't believe he becomes a free agent. And I believe if he has another successful season and he's healthy, they sign him to another one-year deal. At the end of Michael Jordan's career, Michael Jordan signed a one-year deal because he had some problems because they weren't going to extend him and they weren't going to commit the dollars to the rest of that roster. So at the end, when Michael Jordan was in Chicago, it became a year by year. But I think with all the quarterbacks, if you look at Phillip Rivers, you look at Drew Brees, them quarterbacks are they're not the same as Brady, but they're all going to be put in the same situation.
The one difference I would see between Jordan's end of his career and Brady's was Jordan, his final 2 years of his career, made $32 and $33 million respectively in an era when almost no one in the NBA was making even $12 million. So it was a series of one-year deals, but they were double or triple the market one-year deals.
What is Tom Brady making?
Tom Brady now is up to $23 million this year with the $8 million raise from 15. The last thing I'll say on this is I thought his response at the end there was very telling. He was asked by a reporter that I think maybe didn't have the full details of the contract, is it some relief to have clarity on your contract situation? I mean, you didn't see it in the clip, but he took a long pause and then says, it is what it is, which is whose line, of course, Bill Belichick's, and said, listen, I've got 1 year left. There's a lot of things he could have said there to hide his frustration. Oh, yeah, it's great, excited, you know, glad we got this done, got a little raise this year. He made it very clear to me that this was not the contract result he was hoping for. It won't distract him. I'm sure they'll be great. Maybe they'll use this money to add to the roster, the cap space. But this was not the way Don Yee and Tom Brady thought this contract negotiation was going
and
to go.
And just for perspective, what is he making, $23, $24 million this year?
$23 million.
And what does Dak Prescott want?
What, we think upwards probably 30-ish million.
Yeah, he's going to get it.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right, we'll talk a lot more about this coming up. On the other side, though, Drew Brees thinks this could be his best season yet. We'll tell you why. We're asking next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We'll talk some Drew Brees in a second, but first, Nationals, Giants, Kurt Suzuki hitting the line drive to left center. Oh. Kevin Pillar laying out to make a great catch.
And I wonder if he's going to be a Gold Glover this year. I feel like he's been in butt first a bunch, covering a ton of ground in center field for the Giants. That's a heck of a play, man.
All right, moving on. This is the Atlanta Entertainment Basketball League. This is high school class of 2020. And this is shooting guard Jimmy Gatwich picking up Cook's pockets before hitting the 360.
This kid, he's got a highlight reel in high school like Zion, just without the enormous bulk and weight to him. He keeps inventing dunks in games. We saw him do the beneath both legs dunk a couple weeks ago. See, that was this kid.
This was what, the 360 between the legs.
This reverse.
I thought last week that was the best in-game dunk we've seen. He did that with so much ease.
Ease.
Comes around playing some defense, picks the guy's pocket. Yeah. I like that.
All right, Cowboys practice. This is for you, CC. Jason Witten.
How did this man?
Reaching back to complete the one-handed grab.
That ain't one-handed. He brought the other hand in there.
How did this make the show? This is rude to Jason Witten. This is rude to him that we say this is an amazing highlight. This is like showing the 100-year-olds who run the 100-meter in a minute 40.
Don't be shading on Jason Witten like that.
One of the problems Cowboys had was red zone. So right here, that's a touchdown in the red zone bill to help them out. Oh. If he can do that during the regular season.
There you go, see?
Yeah.
Way to put some shine on it.
All right, let's talk about the Saints.
Shine on his bald head. Has he got hair now?
I don't know.
Despite heartbreaking losses to end their last two seasons, the Saints are still tied with the Patriots and the Rams for the NFL's best record during that span. This year, a resilient Drew Brees will be playing his 19th season and said, quote, "I think I have the ability to be as good as I have ever been." Chris, how has Drew Brees been able to just be as good at this age?
Let's just remove the name.
Okay.
Why is Tom Brady so effective this late in his career? Why is Ben Roethlisberger so effective late in his career, over 5,000 yards? Phillip Rivers. Number one, the game's easier. The game's easier to play. You can't put the physical pounding on the quarterback that you used to be able to, so they've protected the quarterback more. The rules, as far as pass interference, illegal contact, all those things, they lead to the quarterback. The no huddle, having the mic in your helmet, that gives the quarterback a huge amount of information pre-snap. So right now, everything is led to the quarterback being very, very successful. When you can't hit them, they know you can't hit them. You can't hit them high. The quarterbacks can sit in the pocket, become more comfortable. I would say at this point, 2019, more quarterbacks are trying to play longer. And you understand the game. The game starts to slow down. It's just as if you have the answers to the test. Tom Brady said that a couple years ago in an interview. Drew Brees said that in an interview recently. So you know. Ben Roethlisberger, he continues to play at a high level. The game's a lot easier. The requirements in the offseason are not as strenuous. There's less time on the field. But for the quarterbacks, this NFL game is the friendliest that it's ever been. So Drew Brees takes care of his body. He loves playing the game. He's been in the same system for a long time there with Sean Payton. So you can see he feels like this will be his best season the way last season was, which he played, especially for the first 12 weeks, at an incredible high level.
And so that's in kind of the general reason that a lot of quarterbacks are playing so much longer than we'd expected at a higher level than we would have expected. For Drew Brees specifically, I thought an article we were talking about this morning by Albert Breer in the MMQB was really insightful about famed quarterback coach, or is it even mechanics coach? I don't know what his title is. Tom House.
Let's just say throwing coach, because he works with baseball pitchers.
Okay, throwing coach, that he will talk with Drew Brees regularly, and if he misses a pass, he will quiz Drew about what did you do wrong there. And it's about, elbow in, elbow out, the different types
mechanics.
Of different mechanical issues that he could be having. And I find it really fascinating that even at this age, this seasoned, to see these guys, Tom's doing it, Drew's doing it. You said before the show, Peyton almost got it started doing it.
Yeah, if you would equate every quarterback to a golfer, then you wouldn't be surprised.
You're totally right, because golfers are always reworking.
Analyze every swing.
Every swing, for no matter how long they play. It's a really good analogy that I had never thought of till you just mentioned it. That because I, maybe in my head, and I think a lot of people's head, you think that once you get, unless you're reworking your throwing motion like Cam Newton, once you have a throwing motion as good as Drew Brees's, what you always talk about, over the top, where it, his height doesn't hurt him, that it's just a repeatable motion, and that if he has one get away from him, he knows instantly what it is, just get back to it. But working with someone on a day-to-day basis, trying to either improve, tweak, whatever, I'm certain that has contributed. It's almost a different version of sports science to his success, because he's not the athlete he once was, not that he was ever a superstar athlete. I'm sure he doesn't have quite the arm strength he once did, not that he ever had the strongest arm in the
league. I would be careful.
You disagree with that?
Working with Coach House and a number of other guys, Tom Brady, we saw this summer,
yep,
he measured his ball velocity. It was faster than when he came in. So, yes, these guys, Drew Brees, his arm is as strong or stronger than it was at Purdue. And we're starting to see minor gains, but doing it for a long period of time. So even if it's a minor gain, but I've been doing it for 15 right. years, it adds a lot to a quarterback.
And then when you add the mechanics to his accuracy, to his ability to see the field, to his decision-making, a lot of that comes, like you said, with being in the league a long time, with knowing what defenses are going to give you. But do you think that the team that's surrounding him right now could be the best team he's had in his career right now?
I think they have a chance to be special. Excuse me. They have... Over the last 10 years, they've had a number of offenses that would go down NFL history, yep, special offenses. And Drew Brees has put together, like Peyton Manning, some of the most historic seasons. But I do believe because of the lack in the last 2 years of tight end productivity. So they go out and get Jarrett Cook in free agency. Last 2 years, Saints tight ends have been one of the least productive we've seen in the NFL. Second fewest targets, only 150 in 2 years. We're talking about Drew Brees now. So they basically playing with three receivers. The tight end has only been a blocker. Their tight ends are the fifth fewest receptions, only 108 receptions over the last 2 years, and fourth fewest yards in 1,200, a little more than 1,200 yards. So you add Jarrett Cook to a Michael Thomas, who I feel very comfortable with, Alvin Kamara coming out of the backfield, playing more first and second down compared to just being a third down back. And I believe something you're going to see in the NFL, and I believe the Saints are going to be one of the teams guilty of it. Around the NFL, teams are not trying to play the fullback more. We saw New England get back to a fullback-centric offense. We're going to see not the fullback, but you're going to see more two tight ends in this NFL season. The Saints and Sean Payton, you can see them with Jarrett Cook and a number of other tight ends they have on the roster. So for me, that would be a vast improvement. Help them to be more physical at the point of attack and get those wide receivers, get those tight ends out in routes.
You asked if this is could be the best team he's been on. The best team he's ever been on is the one that won the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that just because they won the Super Bowl. That was the number one offense, and this is really surprising for the Saints, a number four defense.
Yep.
They added extraordinary players on both sides of the ball. Remember, a young Malcolm Jenkins, mm-hmm, who's now with Philadelphia, was one of the safeties on that team. They had really good talent on both sides. When they missed the playoffs 4 out of 5 years, going 7-9 every single year, each of those 4 years, the 7-9 years from 2012, 2016, they had either the worst or second worst ranked defense in football. The last couple years, when they have had tied for the second most wins or tied for the most wins in the NFL, they've had a league average defense to go along with, as Chris said, always a great offense with Drew Brees, even though the offense changed a bit with Ingram and Kamara being a more run-centric offense. I do think this Saints team has an argument that it is the most complete team in the NFL. And we have seen in that dome with that coach and that quarterback, if they have a top 15 defense, they're in the game for a Super Bowl. If they have a top 10 defense, they can become Super Bowl favorites. If they get enough pass rushers off the edge, they've spent a big investment on their secondary as far as being able to play nickel, having three competent corners. Pass rushers plus that corner play, if they can force some turnovers and play well in a very tough division, I trust the offense as much as any offense in the NFC.
All right, you mentioned the defense, you mentioned the tight ends. No one's worried about Ingram not being there? Is no one factoring that in?
I think that's the reason why, from a formation standpoint, Kamara carried the ball a lot more, more touches, 74 more touches in year number two. That progression, he's always been a specialty back. He's a little undersized, slightly built. I don't want to see him carry the ball 300 times. So I believe also Latavius Murray comes over as a free agent, a big back from Minnesota, should be able to assume some of that pounding. So watch how many times he touches the ball. Can he be as efficient as an undersized running back when you bump up those touches? But I believe from a scheme standpoint, they're going to try to duplicate what they did the first 11 weeks of the season. Drew Brees, first 11 weeks, best QBR in the NFL, struggled from week 12 through the playoffs. He was around middle of the pack, I think around 12th ranked quarterback. So trying to continue what they got off to a blazing start last season.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, talk some Cowboys. How will Zeke's holdout impact Dak Prescott on the field? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a doubleheader on FS1. First, Bryce Harper powers the Phillies against the Giants. Then Nolan Arenado and the Rockies take on Manny Machado and the Padres. It almost rhymes. Coverage begins at 3 Eastern at noon Pacific on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Time now for us to go viral. All right, so check out Chiefs all-pro receiver Tyreek Hill getting in some drill work with wide receivers coach Keith Williams. So you're familiar with this. What is Tyreek working specifically on here?
Yeah, this is the box drill right here. And one reason why I didn't think Tyreek Hill and the reason why speed guys aren't really good at wide receiver is because they can run fast, but they don't know how to stop. So what he's training them is how to make him stop and how does he accelerate in and out of the break. Watch his head placement. He wants to keep his head on the defender and just running the top of the route. You can't run an NFL wide receiver and run these types of routes over and over again. So they take away the pounding on the body and they have you run in 5-yard increments so you can work on it. The wide receiver coach is watching. They got video on it. These are all eyeballs to correct your technique, but they allow you to burst in and out of your break. So when the coach says run in and out of your break, that's what he's trying to assimilate right there, trying to control his speed. So when he gets to his mark, he wants to put his foot in the ground and accelerate in and out of the break. That's the way you're able to train yourself.
All right, that was incredibly informative, but I feel like you left out a very important part. That drill, that specific drill he was doing, was invented by who?
By me, okay. Box drill.
Prior to Chris Carter, that drill did not exist.
I did that drill right there.
Do you get a royalty from it?
No. I did that drill right there for Nick Saban and sent him a video. He offered me a job to coach his wide receivers.
Had to move to Tuscaloosa.
Don't you feel like if you invented a drill...
I would have led with
it. You would have led with it.
Chris, he always surprises me, man. Don't know.
The number of coaches taught me 2 or 3 parts of it. I put it all together.
You put it together like a good inventor. You take different things from other people, make it your own.
Hey. All right, here we go. Stories to start your morning. Yesterday, NBA.com released an all-decade team voted on by a panel, of which Nick was not on.
I don't work for NBA.com.
Okay. I'm just saying you wish you were on the panel. You're not on the panel.
Okay.
The first team was, am I right? LeBron,
confirmed.
KD, Steph, Harden, and Kawhi. Did they get this right, Nick?
I want to give them credit. They did absolutely get this right. There were 4 no-brainers. LeBron, KD, Steph, and Harden, no doubt about it.
Yes.
The one other front court spot, when I saw Kawhi, my immediate reaction was, is that a little recency bias? Came into the league mid-decade, doesn't have enormous statistical resume. But the other people he's up against would be Melo, Blake Griffin, and Anthony Davis. Kawhi is the best individual success of those guys, 2 defensive player of the years and the finals MVP and team success. So I do think they got the first team right. I got some issues with 2nd and 3rd team. We don't have to get into that. They got the first team right, though. It's a good list.
Yeah, they had to get Kawhi on there. He had to be on the first team, especially the run that he went on. If you look at before the injury and look at his playoff averages,
right.
Hey, man, my man Dusty got me hip to that one. He's been doing it for long enough, especially he deserved it.
All right. Todd Gurley gets a lot of attention as the key focal point of the Rams offense. But don't forget about the receivers. Robert Wood says that the Rams wideouts are a 4-headed monster. CeCe, what's the biggest key to the Rams getting back to the Super Bowl now?
I like Robert Woods. He's really developing. Last year, man, they had the 2-headed monster between him and Brandon Cooks. Their ability to be able to run different routes, especially with him running the intermediate and Brandon being more of the deep threat for them. But they have to grow their game. Last year when Todd Gurley was injured, when he wasn't up to 100%, this offense suffered. and you could see it. So you can see them developing their playmakers. But for me, I like a wide receiving core. I typically say a basketball team. So there's no four-man basketball. You need another one. Need another player, and I think that the lack of their tight end being involved in the offense, it hurt them. I know from talking to people who have information on how New England game planned, they specifically knew they were not going to utilize the tight end, so it's like you were only preparing for 10 guys on their offense. If the coach does not get that part figured out, it will hinder the growth of this young and emerging wide receiving core.
Here's the concern for the Rams. In 2017, if you look at games lost to injury, they were the healthiest team in the NFL. Last year, games lost to injury on offense, they were the second healthiest team in the NFL. The only substantial injury they suffered during the regular season was to Cooper Kupp. And by the way, that one injury they couldn't sustain. The moment Cooper Kupp went down, Jared Goff went from being one of the best quarterbacks in the league statistically to above average. Then in the playoffs, you saw Todd Gurley not be 100%, and you saw their offense really grind to a halt. The Rams clearly, when everything is operating at peak capacity, are a juggernaut offensively. When they're getting to the line of scrimmage quick, when McVay's in Goff's ear, when they've got their three wide receivers and a healthy Todd Gurley, that team can go hang 54 points on national TV as we saw them do on the Kansas City Chiefs. That team can go score 30-plus points a game. But because they don't have a lot of diversity in formation, because they are the most predominant one running back, one tight end, three receiver set team, as soon as part of that puzzle, part of that formula almost is changed, they didn't show you that they had a second or third pitch. That's the concern, not to mention that big name defense statistically last year was league average, and it won't have quite as much talent this year as it did last year.
And then that other concern is, what about Jared Goff? Just because Jared Goff is somewhat in that Dak Prescott boat where you're not really sure who he is based on who else is on the field. Is Jared Goff the same player if Todd Gurley's not 100%, if he doesn't have his receivers out there at 100%?
Well, Jared Goff, to me, is a better quarterback than Dak Prescott. And the reason why, he can throw the ball. He has more variety. He has a stronger arm. He has better timing, better anticipation. And the thing about the thing about Goff, he gets a lot of criticism. Yes, he did suffer when Cooper Kupp went out of the lineup. But if you look at the numbers, he actually had a higher quarterback rating with C.J. Anderson on the field than Todd Gurley. So I know people talk about him an awful lot, but the numbers sometimes don't back up what they're talking about. Dak, his numbers suffer. When Zeke is out of the lineup, his numbers go down by 10 points. All right? Goff, that's not the case. Cooper Kupp was the only player that you can say when he went out, his numbers suffer. So he continues to grow as a quarterback. I believe it's up to the offense to be more creative to be able to help the quarterback. But as a passer, I will take him over Dak Prescott any day.
All right. Speaking of Dak Prescott, back to the Cowboys now. The team has yet to agree to extension for three of their offensive stars, one of which is Dak. And which of those three should be prioritized? Many believe Zeke is the most important player to Dallas' success. The Cowboys reporter Todd Archer believes that Dak needs Amari Cooper more because, quote, points come in the passing game. All right, Nick, who does Dak need more in order to be successful? Is it Amari Cooper or is it Ezekiel Elliott?
Todd Archer, Cowboys reporter. So listen, this is where my friends in the analytics community, my friends that try to embrace the analytics, that you're going to get us in trouble here because...
Oh, that's what he was doing?
Well, the points come in the passing game are what is in vogue right now and what is accurate is you score the football in the NFL throwing it. What did Troy Vincent sit here yesterday said? It's points, passing, penalties, or the plays, mm-hmm. passing, penalties, figure out your points. All of that is true. But you have to understand the circumstances in which those points come and those plays are run. Yes, Dak Prescott needs Amari Cooper to be the best version of himself. We saw that unequivocally. But we didn't see Dak and Amari ever play without Zeke. We didn't ever see what they would look like if they know the number one weapon, the number one option for the Cowboys is Amari Cooper because Zeke's off the field out of the game. When Zeke missed time, it's before Amari was on the Cowboys. There are general rules to follow if you're talking about the generic NFL team. And then you look at specific NFL teams and say, does it apply here 100%? With the Cowboys, it simply does not. The best player on their team is a running back. The most dangerous player on their team is a running back. They have a team built specifically for a running back to be as great as Zeke is because of their all-pro offensive linemen and their limitations at quarterback. So, I am with the analytics revolution coming to the NFL and people recognizing you don't have to throw to set up play action, that throwing on first down is the most beneficial thing to do. All those things in general are true, but it doesn't mean they are true across the board. And acting like they're true for a team with limitations at quarterback, one solid wide receiver that we know of, and the best running back in football, I don't believe that's true. So with respect to Todd Archer and my friends at Football Outsiders, for the Cowboys might be the exception that disprove the rule in this one instance.
Jenna, analytics are in the NFL. The analytics have been in the NFL for 30 years. I don't know what they called them. Because when you get in the goal line region, Jenna, there's four gaps to the right of the center. There's four gaps to the left of the center. You know what the defense does, Jenna? They put a guy in every one of those gaps, and they still got three guys free. So you can't block them. When the quarterback has the ball, and typically he's not a runner, so that's not analytics. That's just counting the numbers. In the NFL, no one wants to be run on, all right? It's a personality. It's a machoism. It's a thing in the NFL. They would much rather throw it on you. So when you get in the red zone, they invite you to throw the football. So as long as I've been associated with the NFL, which has been since 1987, you have been able to move the ball between the 20s, running the football, and you throw it to be able to score the football. So it's not new to the NFL. That's just an old phrase. He tried to dress up, but that's the way you score the football in the NFL because the overall philosophy of it. Zeke is the best player. If Dallas had Russell Wilson as their quarterback and they wanted to up their passing game, I would be like, oh, okay. All right, because Russ is a better runner than Dak. And then I'd have been like, oh, okay, Amari and Dak might be able to run a little bit more to augment that running game that you're missing with Zeke. But no, the Dallas Cowboys, outside of Jerry and his son, the most important Cowboy happened to be Ezekiel Elliott.
And even in 2019, if the Cowboys, poof, weren't a franchise anymore and every player on the team were a free agent, is there a team in the league that if they said, hey, you can have either Zeke or Amari, is there a team in the league that would say, I want Amari, not Zeke? I don't think so. You can maybe
the Jets.
The Jets, maybe the Giants, because they already have Saquon and they need wide receivers.
Yep.
Like there's.
So if this is so clearly siding with Zeke and he's so clearly the best player and the most important player, mm-hmm. why doesn't Jerry Jones say, fine, just give him the money. We'll figure the other two out later because this is where we want to center our franchise.
Because Jerry Jones is a friendly owner, but he is a nasty, nasty negotiator. And Jerry knows this. He knows that Zeke is one mishap from being suspended for a whole year. So Zeke, what he thinks his value to the team is, when we talk X's and O's, but the number one talent you have, I repeat on this show all the time, is availability. L. Bell, the reason why the Steelers were not apt to give him $40 million guaranteed, they knew he had already flunked a couple drug tests. He's one more positive test from missing significant amount of time. So these are things that people aren't calculating with Jerry. They just think Jerry, they take Jerry for granted. They hear his sound bites and everything. But I know this, and I know people in the league, they know that Jerry Jones is in a class one of one, Nick.
One of one.
As far as nasty negotiator, as far as toeing the line, like he is not one to back down, and he has shown time after time. If you make him say who the boss is, and that's what he's going to do to Ezekiel Elliott because he has the power and the upper hand in this negotiation.
And I just want to circle back to one other thing because you said something I think that's interesting and I think that should be amplified, which is in the NFL, as long as you've been around it, guys, teams don't want to be run on.
No.
That it's emotionally, it feels different than if a team hits you for a big passing game. And either things like that that are real, that you can't talk to 100 football players, have 100 of them tell you the same thing, and then say, well, the numbers say this. And nobody likes the numbers more than me. But spending enough time with you over the last 3 years, spending enough time with other football guests, it is not just an equation you can punch into it. There has to be a little art to go along with the science. The sport where analytics came into prominence the most and the first was baseball, because that almost is science. It's one-on-one battles where, guys, it can be 25 players, 25 cabs. Football, the reason it's the furthest along from there is because so much of it is almost an 11-person ballet that involves the personalities, that involves the mentality, so many things. And so when it comes to things like this, you have to incorporate what the actual people who've done it are saying. And what the actual people who've done it are saying is, if he's the best player on your team, and if he can take the heart from your defense, even if 4.5 yards per carry is not as good as 7.5 yards per pass, it has an effect on winning that is hard to quantify simply numerically. And I still think teams should rely on the numbers more than they do, but you can't do it just by that. And the eye test says Zeke's the most important Cowboy. The players tell you Zeke's the most important Cowboy. We'll see if the Cowboys' pocketbook tells you Zeke's the most important Cowboy.
Moving on now, it's been 3 seasons since Colin Kaepernick last played in the NFL. We haven't seen much of him of late. Yesterday, he had a message he wanted to share.
"5 a.m., 5 days a week, for 3 years, still ready."
Nick, what'd you think of the video?
Made me think of a lunch Chris and I had almost to the day. It was end of August last year, where we sat down with Colin, and Colin asked Chris, it was really sad actually, Colin asked Chris, "Do you think I'm gonna get back in the league?" And Chris, no one's ever accused him of not being honest, even when maybe I would think he shouldn't be, looked at me and I said, "Nah, man, I think it's over." We didn't think it was fair, but think it's over. And man, that is not what Colin expected to hear. Slumped down in the seat a bit and then continued to talk. And listen, Colin Kaepernick was blackballed by the NFL. Some people are fine with it, some people aren't fine with it. I'm not fine with it. He has continued to train as if that blackballing has an expiration date. It does not. Now, I look around the league and I say, if this offseason, There are teams that if they had signed, even having missed this much football, if they had signed Colin Kaepernick, if the New York Giants this offseason said, "You know what, we're not trading Odell, we're keeping Odell, we're using that sixth pick on one of those awesome Clemson defensive linemen, we've got Saquon, Eli retired, and we've signed Colin Kaepernick," would you be more optimistic about the Giants this year under that circumstance than under the one they are now? The Broncos, if instead of signing Joe Flacco, they had signed Colin Kaepernick, because once upon a time they wanted to, would you be more optimistic about their chances than you are now? The Ravens, even though Lamar, I think, one day might be a really good quarterback, it's not yet, would you be more optimistic about them with that defense, that running game, with Cap? I would be. But he's not going to get back in the league. The blackballing's approaching 900 days, and I respect his work ethic, but at this point it's just for his own personal mental health, if you will, to know that he could, if he got the call, to not worry, what if I do get the call, I'm not going to be ready. But it's not going to help him play football, because he's not going to get the opportunity to play football.
Well, I continue to talk to Cap, and I talked to Cap about a week and a half ago, and I requested a video because I asked him how he's doing, how his workouts and stuff are going, how his stuff socially is going. He's involved with a number of different programs, doing some exciting stuff. "How's the football part going? Are you keeping up?" "No," he said, "I'm keeping it up. I'm working on it." "All right," I said, "send me some video." So yesterday, him and his girlfriend, they sent this out to me. And then I saw it was released publicly. So I'm glad that he's able to continue to work out. Because I did. I flat looked at him and told him I thought his NFL career was over. I thought when he went down that road, based on the ownership of these teams, even if they do change a team or two, it's still in the same family. Still the same mentality. So for me, the NFL, one of my big problems with Cap not playing before was they always advertise it's the 1,800 best players in the world. And we know that it's not. He's a perfect backup to, even if you just think he's a dual threat, Lamar Jackson.
Sure.
He can't mentor him in Baltimore with that defense they have. You can duplicate the style for which you can play, which is very, very rare. Oh, RG3 can do it because he's not taking a knee, but Cap can't do it. So for me, I like to see that he's working out. Now, the hardest thing to be able to do as a quarterback is be able to gather up some wide receivers and run some routes and things like that. I think that video is far more telling because we know he's an athletic freak. Dude is 6'5", 6'6", and is ripped. I know that. Yeah, you go to the gym. I can go down to the local gym and see a bunch of muscle heads that are ripped up. But throwing the football, I think that's really the only way. How can he gather up some skilled guys, quarterbacks with wide receivers and throwing the ball, repetitive, throwing it down the field so people see, man, even his throwing motions tightened up a little bit. Those are the things that I do believe would still keep that window open because this is a crazy business, man. And you only need one person just to give him a look. One of the big problems is no one has even brought him in for a workout. I mean, they're bringing these guys in. I've seen this for years, man. They bring in a guy. They put him in some shorts and let him work out. I'm like, there's no chance this guy's an NFL player. Collins is definitely an NFL player who they have decided his stance on social justice is totally against the product that they want to put out there. So that's why he's in the dilemma. And I still say this. I do not believe he'll ever play in the NFL because of the attitude of the 32 owners. Does he deserve to play? If everyone else deserves a right to play, he deserves a right to play.
And listen, he's always now, and I don't know if it helps him come to peace with this. I hope it does. And I interact with Cap some, not as often as you do, but I think he knows this. He will always have a legacy greater than his playing career. He was an enormous part of what I would call the modern era athlete awakening to their role, not only in their communities, but their role on the national stage to help set the conversation. And when people to this day, if one of those awful videos circulates Twitter of some instance of horrible police brutality, what is very often captioned with is, "This is why we kneel." That is a testament to Colin Kaepernick and the movement that he helped reinvigorate in this country and really that he staked his career on. When you do something like this, it is always a risk. Once upon a time, it was a risk of assassination. It's always been a risk of your own personal profit or your own personal career or your public in your stature in the public eye for a lot of people. It's not fair that you have to risk that, and it's not fair that sometimes the penalty is that, but that's what it was for Cap, and now he will have a legacy greater than that of quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. It's just a shame he could have had both. In a more just world, he would have been able to have both.
That being said, do you think he has any regrets, knowing how much he does want to play football again, but also knowing how much of a difference he has made as a result of him now not obviously being able to play football?
That right there, it's hard to impossible for me, Jenna. It's a great question. But for me, every dream I ever had was doing something competitive. My dream was being a professional athlete. I want to try to influence kids to pursue that dream. I believe it's very, very important. I love sports. So to me, it wasn't in my heart of hearts. What Cap is doing, it didn't mean the same thing to me. I didn't have that type of opportunity. So only Cap can judge that. Only Cap and what he does moving forward can be the judge of that. Because for me, I know in his world, he's doing a lot of things to make changes. But as an African-American, when I drive, I'm still scared. I still have the same fears. I still see the same videos. The people, my brothers and sisters, meaning my little biological brothers and sisters in the neighborhoods they're in, they're still scared. So what did we win? I'd have to pose that question that only he can answer. Was it really worth it? Was it needed? Hell yes. But was it worth it? Only Cap can answer that.
All right, we'll leave it there. Much more First Things First right after this. Time for stories to start your morning. We're getting more details about Antonio Brown's foot injury. Turns out he's sidelined with frostbitten feet.
Ugh.
This was reportedly caused by a cryotherapy session. They tell you to wear socks. He obviously did not wear socks. You frostbite your feet. See, have you ever seen or heard of something like this happening to a player before?
Yeah, we're a bunch of idiots and everything. We do dumb stuff. Disregard. Don't get in hot tub without... What we're going to do it, disregard what the rules are. Yes, I burned my hamstring with the ice bag on it. Said, don't leave it on there more than 15 minutes, 20 at max. Left it on there, fell asleep. A little nerve went down my right leg. My foot almost went numb and everything, but I burned my skin. So if you look at when I'm laying down, face down, left hamstring, like a mocha chocolate. Mm-hmm. Man, yeah. The right one is definitely double dip chocolata.
Jenna, why are you wearing that Band-Aid today and yesterday?
There's a difference.
Oh, Jenna, okay, Jenna, who's difference. Been judging AB all morning, was trying to do a 1 mile bear crawl.
Say that again. Man.
Jenna, who's been judging Antonio Brown all morning, but Jenna fashions herself professional workout warrior. She even gets paid money to train people.
Now, Nick,
was not wearing the proper equipment.
Can you do 5 yards of bear crawl?
Of course, but I would wear the proper equipment. Jenna was trying to do a mile. She cut up her whole hand.
But they told me to wear gloves, and I wore gloves.
Okay, Jenna, of course, I'm sure it's not your fault, just like it wasn't AB. B's fault. But
wear
the point
socks,
is,
man.
Sometimes guys in trying to get better, they wear the wrong equipment.
We're going to put you in one of them cryo tanks with your mouth open.
Not interested.
I would love to do that, Trey. 15th overall pick
in
former.
Ball head, Nick, too. Not Nick with the
Ohio
with
State
the
quarterback.
Whoop,
Dwayne
top.
Haskins will see his first live NFL game action tonight when Washington faces off against the Browns. See, what do you want to see out of Dwayne Haskins?
What you don't want to see, Jenna, is the question, and that's interceptions. That's taking too long to deliver the ball in the pocket. Even if he doesn't complete above 50% of his passes, you want to see the mechanics. Does he understand the offense? Does the offense run like a professional quarterback is running it? Because Case is his backup. Colt McCoy's his backup. I'm sure he's been schooled because these guys know they're just a place marker until he's ready. So don't make the big mistakes trying to make big plays. Get the team in and out of the huddle. 3-step drop. Get it out your hand. 5-step drop. Get it out your hand. Don't get sacked, bruh. Make the Buckeyes proud. Let's go.
There's only a few teams where, from a viewership perspective, the preseason's really interesting to me. And those are teams that have quarterback battles or young quarterbacks. So I want to watch Washington. I want to watch Miami. Obviously, Arizona, the Giants.
Yeah, got to see it.
Places where we're going to see, can Haskins play well enough over this next month that he is the week one starter? Or is he going to have to wait until the second or third month of the season to get in there? His journey towards that starting job starts tonight.
All right, on to the NBA now. So we haven't heard too much from Kevin Durant since he walked off the court in Game 5 of the Finals with a torn Achilles. Since then, he signed with the Nets and has begun his rehab. Yesterday, in an interview with Chris Haynes, KD was asked if the Warriors were to blame for his injury. Said, hell no, how can you blame the Warriors? No, I heard the Warriors pressured me into getting back. Nobody never said a word to me during rehab as I was coming back. It is basketball. Expletive happens. Nobody was responsible for it. It was just the game. We just need to move on from that expletive because I'm going to be back playing. Nick, what do you think about what KD had to say?
I want to give Kevin Durant credit for taking the high road, for not rehashing old stuff. If he had given a different answer, it would have started a totally different news cycle that he would have had to answer for the next time he spoke to the media.
Absolutely.
And maybe repeatedly. And so I think he did the smart thing here. And I think it was the right thing by an organization that for the better part of three years, tried to always do the right thing by Kevin Durant. Now, I do not believe him. I do not think this is the honest answer. And in fact, I know he was pressured when the owner says during the Western Conference Finals, he'll be back for the NBA Finals.
Maybe Kevin Durant looks at it as if it wasn't pressure, because maybe Kevin Durant, his goal was the same, and maybe the information that the owner was talking about, Kevin doesn't feel like it pressured him.
Okay.
Like maybe Kevin thought Game 5 was always the game he was going to come
back.
Well,
he said that Game 5 was the game I was always going to come back. But then Steve Kerr and the injury report, They left the door open him coming back in game two, and then it was released by somebody to reliable reporters, I think Chris Haynes. They expect him back in game three. KD says, I was always targeting game five. But throughout this interview, and credit to Chris Haynes, who's done a great job covering this league over the last few years, but particularly this year, for getting a sit-down at Kevin Durant's house in Malibu to get this. But KD also said he didn't make his decision to go to the Nets until the morning of June 30th, that he and Kyrie Irving had not discussed playing together, that it was, yeah, they're friends and it's a happy coincidence. There are a lot of things said in this article that I do not believe to be the accurate history, but I am not criticizing Kevin Durant for presenting it. And when it comes to the injury front, I think it was the smart move to not worry about something you can't fix in the past.
Yeah, the thing that I have and the issue that I have was the information that I was gathering. A person that's tore both of his calves, a person that knew it was on the board, if I didn't get it cleared up, if I didn't get that calf cleaned up, that my Achilles would be jeopardized. So for me, I don't have a problem with Kevin Durant playing. I don't have a problem with an athlete pushing himself. My biggest problem happens to be with the information. Golden State said he was not jeopardizing his Achilles by going out there and playing on a pulled calf. And that was not the truth. Obviously, he goes into the game and gets hurt early in the game. So the information that they were moving forward with, there was better information. So I can understand Kevin saying, I would have pushed myself regardless, knowing that it was going to be the finals and everything. I can understand that. I expect him to do that. I would have done that. And afterwards, I would be doing the same thing with Kevin Durant. I would be saying the same thing. Just because the owner said Kevin Durant will be coming back does not mean that Kevin Durant felt the pressure. Now, do I accept what the owner did? No, because there was a better way to do it. He didn't have to say that. And the information with the coaching staff saying that they weren't jeopardizing his Achilles and continuing staying to that messaging point, I know that that wasn't accurate. But a great athlete, an average athlete, any athlete at that level is going to try to come back and push themselves to get on the court.
All right, so let's spin this forward now to next season, whether or not we see KD, who knows. When we do actually see the return of Kevin Durant on the basketball court, which version of him are we going to see? Is it going to be the same one, do we think,
that we
last saw?
Sorry to interrupt. It'll be a version we've never seen before. Now, it doesn't mean he won't be a great player. It doesn't mean he won't one day once again be an MVP candidate, but if we see him at all this year, and in this article he's asked about it and he says, I don't know, like I'm working essentially, gives, I think, the right answer on that. This year, we're not going to see anything close to old Kevin Durant. And I would imagine the following season, we're not going to. The last time we saw Kevin Durant, he was giving you, what was it, 41-7-7 over the last six games of the playoffs?
Yeah, but that's in the playoffs. What the intensity they're going to play at in the regular season. Will we see the Kevin Durant that played in the regular season?
Yeah, so I
think it's a fair question.
I don't think he is. He was right there to become the best player in basketball. I think his, now the mountain he has to climb is, can I be a top five player? I think that is, and I don't think that's an indictment on him, but this is, aside from a spinal cord injury, this is the worst injury a basketball player can suffer, even in 2019.
If you're trying to rely on your athletic ability, I totally disagree with Nick. And the reason why, modern technology, I talked to my doctor. My doctor said there is no reason Kevin Durant in 6 months, 6.5 months, won't be 100%. And the reason why I don't believe it, not only the technology, not only the stretching and the way they get the athletes up and moving them a lot quicker now, there's been no athlete, there's been no basketball player that is a pure basketball player as Kevin Durant. You can't compare him to Dominique Wilkins. You can't compare him to Rudy Gay. You can't compare him to Kobe Bryant. He's a better scorer to basketball than Kobe. Yeah, Kobe, his Achilles was going to hurt him the way he played offense, the way he went at it recklessly. It's going to hurt him. But as a jump shooter, as a scoring machine, his Achilles and being tightening of that Achilles, to me, is not going to limit him. And I do believe we will see a version of Kevin Durant that we are very familiar with and used to seeing. I do believe he will be a top player again based on the medical, based on how he plays the game. And we've never had a jump shooting guy like him injure his Achilles.
Right.
And his Achilles injury doesn't affect his ability to be able to shoot it. And him being at 7 foot, he can still shoot over top of a guy's head. So I believe to Kevin Durant that we're going to see the basketball world is one they're going to be very familiar with.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.